leadership to the public square, telling people the truth they need to hear and fighting for revolution. And he is straight up at this historic time, putting himself forward because he is a leader who can lead us through this crazy morass and intensifying nightmare and crisis of this system to wrench out a real revolution, true emancipation for all of humanity. So don't miss this. If you're on TikTok, Instagram, X, formerly known as Twitter, all the social media platforms, look for at Bob Avakian Official, and you can find him bringing you the truth, hard-hitting, not watered down, the truth you need regularly. Don't miss it. The other thing I want to highlight for you is that the full RNL, Revolution Nothing Less show, is available at youtube.com/therevcoms. And on that channel, you can find the full, complete, historic 3-part series interview that I did with Bob Avakian together with my co-host there, Andy Z. We interviewed Bob Avakian extensively. He spoke about his life. He opened up his heart, his history, his personal development, but also his political development. He explored the lessons and formative experience that he draws from working closely with the Black Panther Party in their most revolutionary days. He gets into how he went from being a patriotic American, thankful that he was born in what he believed was this greatest of all countries, to somebody who has become an ardent critic of this country and everything it stands for and everything it does in the world down to today, and the most fiercest advocate for an actual revolution and fighter for this revolution to bring about a world without everything America stands for and true emancipation for all of humanity. He gets into the strategy for this revolution. He gets into the future society, what it needs to look like. He gets into all the things that are holding people back, from those who are catching the hardest hell at the bottom of this society to the students on the campuses with the woke lunacy that's taking hold, but also reaching people's highest aspirations for a radically different world. He does all of this and more, gets into the poetic spirit, gets into all of this, but he is hardcore for a real revolution. And there is nothing like this journey, like these interviews. So I recommend you go to youtube.com/therevcoms. You can also find them at the website revcom.us, where you will find hundreds of articles, audio, other clips about this revolution and from this revolutionary leader, Bob Avakian. There are very few people in the public square or not in the public square who would say that these are normal times, or times even close to normal, whatever that has meant. But very few realize that this is one of those rare times when revolution is more possible. And for the sake of humanity and the planet, we need to seize this moment. So the resources I just gave you are indispensable in the situation we are in. So with that, let's begin with the opening commentary from the Revolution Nothing Less show. My name is Sansara Taylor, and I'm very happy to be joined today by Andy Day.
Very glad to be with you, Sansara, and welcome to everyone tuning in. This show is about a real revolution, a revolution to overthrow this system of capitalism, imperialism, which is the source of so much needless suffering here and all over the world, a revolution to put humanity on the path to real emancipation.
Here on the RNL show, we take up and follow, and we proudly promote the leadership of Bob Avakian. Bob Avakian, BA, is a far-sighted, big-hearted, hardcore revolutionary leader. BA doesn't pander to people, just saying the things they want to hear. He tells the truth, even when it is hard to hear. And Bob Avakian does this because he scientifically understands that not only is a real emancipating revolution possible, but that the masses of people in this country, as much as they have been brainwashed and too often beaten down by this system, can themselves become conscious emancipators of humanity, makers of revolution, if they are struggled with, to get out of all the bullshit they're caught up in now and get into this revolution. Bob Avakian has been walking the walk and talking the talk since he first became a revolutionary back in the 1960s, working closely with the Black Panther Party. And through that time, ever since then, he has gone to work on the biggest questions that people ran up against then and since in trying to make a revolution. He has forged a new communism, a whole new framework for human emancipation. And today you will hear from BA directly from his 2003 talk, where he breaks down what is a system And then he gets into the nature of this system by getting at one of the most horrific crimes built into this system, white supremacy and the systematic oppression of Black people, and today the unrelenting police terror that is inflicted on Black people.
We're also going to hear from our correspondent, Alan Goodman, talking with Dr. Majid Jaber from on the ground in Gaza about the hellish conditions that have been created by the U.S.-Israeli slaughter of the Palestinian people. We're going to be taking on the mental shackles of religion, and we're going to talk about plans for July 4th and why you should not be celebrating America this year. But first, we're going to hear from Noche Diaz, the national spokesperson for the RevCom Corps for the Emancipation of Humanity, about some bullshit that just happened. What the f***, Chuck?
An unusual musical happening in a most unusual place.
What a nice crowd. Well, thank you, Secretary Blinken, and my career-long and honest mentor with kinfolk, Leo Cohen, and the other U.S. Global Music Ambassador appointees, Justin Tranter, Amani White, Lainey Wilson, Denise Graves, it was a pleasure meeting you, Breelan, and Grace Bowers, and I'm honored to be standing next to all of you here today, and that's for real, real talk, as we say. Throughout my life and career, I've always believed in the power of music to change, create change, and also change things, and also give voice to the voiceless, power to the powerless, and also truly inspire lasting social change. Peace, like good music, is not easy to achieve. It takes time, detail, persistence, resilience, refinements, honesty, and yes, even creativity. So, Mr. Secretary, I know you know that better than anything with the way you get down.
I just got done watching Chuck D. Chuck D. The beloved rap artist who has inspired the world with his radical and righteously defiant music. I just watched him, Chuck D, grovel and ingratiate himself to butchers, promising to serve the powers that be and become an actual tool of the U.S. State Department's Music Diplomacy Initiative as a U.S. Global Music Ambassador.
Yo, what's up? This is Chuck D. I'd like to thank everybody in the U.S. State Department, and also you two, for having me being invited to be a United States Global Music Ambassador.
In the words of the head of the State Department, Blinken the Butcher, he announced that Chuck D and all the ambassadors will...
They'll share a window into American identity, American culture, American history, in all of its extraordinary diversity, and bring people together over the values, experiences, and challenges, and hopes that we share.
Wow.
What the f***, Chuck? Tell me, are you going to go to Gaza and promote the shared values between the Palestinian children being incinerated by bombs made in the USA and facilitated by the US State Department that you now serve? How about going to the Congo to promote the shared values between American capitalist vultures and the 50,000 plus children, some as young as 6 years old, working in the cancer-producing hellholes of cobalt mines for pennies a day to produce cheap material for U.S. tech companies? We could go on, but again, what the f***, Chuck? Really? You once called on people to fight the powers that be. What we got to say, yeah. You once rapped the lines,
I got a letter from the government the other day. I opened and read it and said they were suckers. They wanted me for their army or whatever. Picture me giving a damn, I said never.
I guess never didn't really mean never. And now, instead of fighting the powers that be, you are serving the powers that be.
We have a legendary rapper from Flushing, Queens.
Yay.
Who inspired us to fight the power.
You should be calling on people, on everyone, to say no to celebrating, let alone sharing, the disgusting values and experiences that American identity, culture, and history have wrought. No to celebrating America, this model of depraved, racist genocide. Like you once did when you said,
Elvis was a hero to most, but he never meant to me. Yes, he's straight out racist. The sucker was simple and plain.
What the f*** you mean, John Wayne?
'Cause I'm black.
This is now what you're signing up to be a cultural salesman for? What the f***, Chuck? Signing up for and thanking the State Department at a time when people are publicly quitting because they don't want to be complicit with the genocide in Gaza. Signing up to be window dressing for a war criminal, a shill for Blinken, the butcher, an active agent of U.S.'s supporting and arming of the genocide in Gaza.
Shilling.
Russia was 6 years old when Israelis killed her. Hitler was 6 years old. Blinken, you will be remembered as the butcher of Gaza. You will be remembered for murdering innocent Palestinians.
I was saying, the People's Republic of China.
Chuck, all this talk about keeping balance and accountability between the music industry and the government, which are both putrid and depraved, is not what you're doing. What you are actually doing is help keeping people trapped in choosing how they're going to serve the powers that be and the system that those powers rule over and enforce. Because look, America is not just a collection of all of its towering crimes. It is also the embodiment of a capitalist imperialist system. And this goes beyond and deeper than even all the horrendous crimes we've outlined here and that you, Chuck, have condemned in your art. Failing or refusing to confront this deeper reality will keep you and others misled, misdirected, played and ultimately turned into a spokesperson and tool for the horrors you say you hate and stand against. Cut it out. Give it up. Because it's far worse when someone like you, who has stood for something real, starts fronting for this system than when this is just done by people who've never claimed to be for anything more than themselves. So to all those who don't like the taste of boot polish on their tongue, who won't say that their oppressor's suddenly smells like roses, refuse to become a collaborator with genocidal war criminals. And lift your sights. There's a whole other way humanity could be living through an emancipating revolution. So with that, we want to leave you with these words from Bob Avakian.
I'm not talking about some so-called revolution that leaves this system of capitalism imperialism in power, crushing lives and killing spirits on a massive scale. This is not about just changing the faces of the oppressors who are ruling this people-killing, environment-destroying, nuclear war-threatening system that poses a growing danger to the very existence of human beings everywhere. And I'm not talking about what goes on now, where some get ahead and a few get big bank and become part of the business of exploiting people, while masses of people are still held down, exploited, abused, and despised. I'm talking about a real revolution, a revolution to actually overthrow this system we are now forced to live under and bring something much better into being, a whole different way to live and to relate to each other. A completely different system, working to meet the fundamental needs of the masses of people and to serve their highest interests in putting an end to all oppression and exploitation everywhere in the world. A revolution and a radically new society that really is liberating and uplifting. And I'm talking about a real revolution in this time. Not in some far-off, distant time.
All right, Noche, I have to say, when I saw Chuck D standing up there with Bloody Blinken, I was so disappointed. And that really needs to be called out, and you called it out well. I'm really glad you did that today. It takes on heightened importance right now, especially as we go into July 4th, the great American holiday, when we are told to celebrate America, America's freedom, democracy, land of the free, home of the brave, really land of the thief, and home of the slave. And this does need to be called out, and it's really important that you and the RevCom Corps for the Emancipation of Humanity and all of us RevComs have big plans for this July 4th as part of kicking off Revolution Summer. I was hoping you could tell our viewers a little bit more about that.
Yeah. I mean, look, the RevCom Corps is calling on you to join us this July 4th to say no to celebrating America, truly a model of depraved racist genocide. And we are saying we need and we demand revolution and a whole new way to live in a fundamentally different system. Look at the world. Look at Gaza. Look at the police murder of black and brown people. Look at the blood-soaked U.S.-Mexico border. So instead of getting carried away with all the fireworks, hot dog eating, and the red, white, and blue memorabilia, come together. Bring together mementos, art projects, and your voice to expose and to reject this model of depraved racist genocide. We are calling on people all over the country, starting with July 2nd, taking to the trains, taking to the public transportation, spreading the word about this and bringing people into this whole week of saying no to celebrating America. July 4th, we're calling on people to hold demonstrations, marches, rallies, and open mics. We're going to be calling on people to speak their minds and voice their outrage. Say the names of the people who have been lost and taken and stolen by this country. And to give voice to their hopes and aspirations for a different world. And we're taking that all together and coming together on the weekend for picnics all across the country. For people to get together and learn more about the revolution that is fighting to actually get to that whole different world and fundamentally different system. We're coming together and doing all this whole week to propel forward with Revolution Summer 2024, to really seize on this time to impact all of society with a whole different way the world can be and to build up the forces that are fighting for and working for this revolution in the time we live in now.
And I want to stress that when you take part in July 4th, not celebrating America together with the RevCom Corps this July 4th, and as you join with and work collectively as part of the organized ranks of the revolution overall, you're taking part in the ongoing process of changing the political situation and the alignment in society right now as things are rapidly changing. I'm not talking just about trying to convince people broadly of the need for revolution and the possibility of revolution in some general or timeless way. I am talking about concretely changing the situation in society into one that is becoming more favorable for revolution in this time. Because we are not living in normal times. This is a time when things are rapidly changing, headed towards a radical change of one kind or another. We're in a time when the society and the rulers as a whole are more divided than they have been since the Civil War. And it is very likely that this fight over the whole direction of society is going to get way out of control and way out of bounds as we go through this election season. Just think about the fact that Trump has already promised a bloodbath if he loses the election. So right now, through July 4th and going forward through Revolution Summer, we are in a fight to continually increase and strengthen the ranks of the revolution. You need to play a role in this. We need to build up the basis to act in such a way that the chaos and the conflicts that are very likely to erupt in this society between opposing forces is transformed. What is likely to start out as a fight within the confines of this horrific system would need to be transformed into one where millions could be led to go all out for a real revolution with a real chance to win. This is what we are working on now and throughout Revolution Summer. So again, get involved, join us July 4th and going forward from there.
We're going to go now to an excerpt from a talk from Bob Avakian from 2003, Revolution, Why It's Necessary, Why It's Possible, What It's All About. This was an incredible day-long speech, which you can watch in full at revolutiontalk.net. We hear the word system all the time. Well, what is a system and how does it function? Let's watch.
Now in this talk, I'm going to be using the words society and system a lot. By society, I mean a group of people who come together or are brought together for common aims and purposes. And in particular, I mean a society on the level of a country, where people live in a territory together and have the same government, like the United States or Brazil or Egypt or China. By system, I mean an organized way that something is held together and works. Systems have a certain order to them and certain ways in which things are done. Sometimes this is set down in formal rules and regulations or even laws, and sometimes it is just something that everybody has learned and carries out without the need for laws and people assigned to enforce them. For example, a game of cards or dominoes is a system. You have to play these games a certain way or it won't work. You can't put a domino any old place you want, any time you want, and try to think the game's gonna work. What the f*** are you doing, man? And the same is true of a game of cards, a bid whist, spades, or poker. You can't just play any card you want, any time you want, or else you've broken the system and the thing won't work. The same is true of a game like basketball, which is organized in a different way than, let's say, football. You can't just take the ball and run down the court with it in basketball. You have to dribble it or pass it. And in soccer, you can't use your hands unless you're the goalie. Soccer has a different system. A song also has a system. It has certain notes and musical patterns and rhythms. And it often has certain lyrics. If you don't sing the right lyrics or sing the right tune, then you're not singing that song. Or maybe you're not singing at all. Human societies are organized into systems too. As I will get into through the course of this talk, different societies throughout history have been organized into different systems. And at this stage of human history, there is the possibility to bring into being a radically different society with a radically different system. To get another real look at what kind of society, what kind of system this is in the United States today, think about what happened to Amadou Diallo in New York. Now, Richard Pryor used to have this routine he did to show what it was like for a black man just in an ordinary encounter with the police, how you had to try to avoid being one of those mistakes where you got killed. He'd talk about a black man gets pulled over by the police, and he has to say, "I am reaching into my pocket for my license, because I don't want to be no mother." An accident. You have to show them and make clear and loud that you're going into your pocket to bring out your wallet. Otherwise, they'll say you had a gun and shoot you down. And for Amadou Diallo, even that didn't work. Amadou Diallo pulled out his wallet and held it up, and they shot him down anyway. 41 times they shot at him. They pumped his body with bullets. Or look what happened around here to Taisha Miller. The police came up on her. She was in a car, apparently passed out. Her family came up. They begged the police because the car was locked, let them find a way to open it. But no, the police couldn't wait. They fired into the car 29 times, shooting her in the back 12 times. And that wasn't the worst of it. When the family came and was grieving, the cops started mocking them with racist taunts. "Oh, what is this, Kwanzaa? What is this, the Watts whale?" This is America. This is the greatest of all countries. Well, what about what happened with Donovan Jackson and how the cops got off on that thing too? They took him, they punched him in the face and slammed his head down on a car for no good reason and no reason at all. But they got off. One of them got acquitted completely, and the other one, oh, you know, the jury couldn't decide. But let's not blame the jury as much as the judge and the prosecutor.
Whenever they're forced to put a cop on trial for brutality or murder, all of a sudden the prosecutors forget how to prosecute. Anybody who has a case, I'm sure they say, God damn, give me that prosecutor when I got my case go up. They don't call witnesses. They don't ask the witnesses the right questions. They accept the defense theory of what happened and then argue little nitpicky things about it within that framework. The same thing happened with the Amadou Diallo case. The jury found him not guilty, and one of the jurors afterwards said, I wish we could have found him guilty. I hope they sue him, those cops, and get all kinds of money out of him. But the way the judge set it up, we had to go by the law, so we couldn't find him guilty. Well, they should have found him guilty anyway, but you know what she's saying. And the judge is part of it, too. It's part of the conspiracy. Yes, there's a conspiracy to get the cops off. What happened in the Rampart scandal, a scandal in L.A.? They shot up this dude, Latino brother. Then they accused him of assaulting the police. He comes into court in a wheelchair. He's convicted. The judge gives him almost a maximum sentence. Why? Because he didn't show remorse. For what? He didn't do any goddamn thing. But this is the way it works. And what happened when they finally had to put these Rampart cops, or a couple of them, on trial? The judge did everything she could to get the jury not to find him guilty. But this time, the jury found him guilty anyway, so the judge threw out the verdict. Yes, there's a conspiracy to get the cops off. Or think about what happened to Alberta Spruill in her Harlem apartment recently. She was sitting there, doing nothing wrong. The cops busted in, fired a stun gun, and she died. Another accident, as Richard Pryor would put it. Another mistake. Oh, we had the wrong apartment. We were looking for drug dealers, but you're an old black woman who doesn't deal drugs. Well, guess we can't do anything about that now. And of course, they'll never be punished. In Hill Street bullshit, Richard Pryor routines and the real deal, in the book Reflections, Sketches, and Provocations, I told about the following true story that was told to me. A rookie cop had just gotten hired on, and he went out on patrol with his partner, a veteran. They were driving around a neighborhood, and also, all of a sudden, a black man came running up the street. And the veteran turned to the rookie and said, go on, shoot him, it's free. What does that mean, it's free? It means here's a black man running up the street looking suspicious, you can kill him and get away with it. And that isn't even all of it. This rookie wasn't ready for that. I guess maybe he's one of those who joined up believing all the serve and protect bullshit. So he resigned. You know why he resigned? Because he became an outcast in the police force because he wouldn't follow the logic that when you get a free chance to kill a black man, you gotta do it. This is how they are. Killing us. And they're not through. They're thrilling at what they do to us. Then they say, well, what's all the fuss? They never have to pay for murdering you or me. Is that what they mean when they say we're free? The role of the police is not to serve and protect the people. It is to serve and protect the system that rules over the people. To enforce the relations of exploitation and oppression, the conditions of poverty, misery, and degradation into which the system has cast people and is determined to keep people in. The law and order the police are about, with all their brutality and murder, is the law and order that enforces all this oppression and madness.
Once again, let me remind you that you are listening to The Michael Slate Show.
Set out to do. Stand.
There's a cross for you to bear.
Things to go through if you're going anywhere.
Things you want are real.
You have you to complete, and there is no deal.
The U.S.-backed Israeli slaughter of the Palestinian people has not let up. At least 37,700 people have been killed, more than 15,000 of them children, and it's likely the number is far, far higher. Over 500,000 people are starving. Israel continues to target aid workers. Just this week, they bombed a health clinic and killed Hani Al-Jafawi, the director of ambulance and emergency services in Gaza. Most of Gaza is totally and completely uninhabitable. Meanwhile, the government-sanctioned ethnic cleansing and theft of land of the Palestinian people in the West Bank has increased dramatically. This is a genocide of the Palestinian people, a U.S.-funded Israeli genocide. Last week, our correspondent, Alan Goodman, spoke with Dr. Majid Jaber at the European Hospital in Gaza to hear directly about the nightmare conditions on the ground, conditions caused by the U.S. backing of Israel. Here at the RNL Revolution Nothing Less show, we're about making a revolution to overthrow the system that is driving this and get to a world without this kind of needless horror and oppression. And from that perspective, we recognize the importance of hearing from a wide range of voices, insights, and perspectives. To learn more about the RevComs, subscribe to our show and go to revcom.us. And now, here's the interview.
I'm speaking with Dr. Majid Jaber at the European Gaza Hospital in Gaza. And for our listeners, Dr. Jaber is joining us under incredibly difficult circumstances, both personally and in the hospital. So I so appreciate what you're doing to somehow carve out time and energy to fill our viewers in on the situation. Tell us what the situation is like now in the European Gaza Hospital and what you are learning about and what you are seeing outside the hospital.
Absolutely. First of all, thank you for interviewing me. I'm trying to help us and me shed light on the situation here in Gaza, especially the European Hospital where I mainly worked during the war. So when it comes to the health sector here in Gaza, it is very corrupt. It's very unorganized and chaotic. So we lack most of the basic equipment that other doctors abroad take for granted. Let's say monitors. ECG machines and blood pressure monitors. Even sometimes we don't have a glucometer, you know, to just measure your glucose or measure your ketones or try to. There are even other equipment that are handheld, like an ultrasound that sometimes is non-functioning, an otoscope. Check your ears if there's any inflammation, if there's any rupture from airstrikes, because a lot of people just come and like they're like, there's a lot of tinnitus, there's a lot of bumming. I'm just like, I need to see if there's any damage, and I just can't do it. And we sometimes lack what we call a laryngoscope. We have a lot of rusty equipment, the needle holders, the forceps, and the tweezers. Is still in a very bad and rough condition. And what is going on is that day by day, the Israeli government has been very strict when it comes to, let's say, allowing medical equipment to come here to Gaza. They barely allow any, let's say, reasonable amount of disposable items. We have run out of urine bags for weeks here in Gaza, and we had to use, you know, plastic bottles, you know, something like, you know, something like this. I ask the patient to drink, then go urinate in that, or like use the same normal saline bag. I just like swap it and like try to push it into the Foley catheter, you know, to just measure how much urine is that patient is producing. And besides equipment, also we lack medication. A lot of people with heart failure, diabetes, hypertension, patient with, let's say, ischemic heart disease, we sometimes run out of aspirin or some diuretic that these patients use, and a lot of them die because of that. We had a lot of instances where a diabetic patient goes into diabetic ketoacidosis or HHS, and they just die. They present to us due to poor transport nowadays. It's very risky for the patient to go to the hospital. It just takes like half an hour or an hour, and this hour is the golden hour to save the patient. And they come and they present very late, and we lose the patient most of the time. And so another aspect of what we are struggling with is the staff itself. We barely have a, let's say, we don't have many doctors and nurses in our hospital. And sometimes when there is a, let's say, an emergency, an airstrike, a massacre, let's say 20 people are killed and 100 wounded, I can't really tend to all these patients. And it becomes really challenging because I could have saved that patient's life, but I just can't tend to everybody. And those who could have been saved die because of lack of care, pretty much. And it is a dilemma. It's very frustrating. And we can't do much about it.
Yeah. I'd like to return to the situation with your lack of supplies and personnel. But before I do, could you talk about who's coming to the hospital? We know that there's widespread famine. We know that there's widespread disease. We know that there is widespread injury, but can you just give us a sense of who these people who are coming to you in such desperate need are?
Oh, absolutely. We have a lot of cases of malnutrition, especially very old people with very heartbreaking stories. You see this mother who lost all her children, father who lost his wife and those who take care of him, and these people get in depression. They do not they're not very compliant with their medication. They do not eat well, and they present to us because someone noticed something is wrong, and they present here very malnourished. Of course, let's not mention the organized famine, or like, let's say, the starvation of our people. The amount of food that enters Gaza is specifically calculated, and this is not a special case during this genocide. If you look before October 7th, you can see the guidelines for the Israelis. They calculate how many calories per capita in Gaza, and this is very scary if you think about it. And now it has become way more severe. And so you see a lot of babies underweight, you know. And it's really challenging because trying to feed these babies is also a problem. Like, medically speaking, you cannot just like feed the baby all of a sudden. They can get into refeeding syndrome. They can get into a lot of problems. Also, a lot of the children cannot tolerate formula milk or breast or like their mother's milk also. They need a special formula. This formula is usually very expensive. And you can't really have it here in Gaza nowadays, and you're just basically witnessing the child dying in front of your eyes. You can barely do anything about it. We see a lot of cases of to give a better picture, a lot of these kids and children used to go to Jordan, go to Egypt to receive treatment for their chronic illnesses, because our health sector is very lacking. And now, once the war started, the genocide started, they're not allowed to travel. And we had a huge number of these children dying just because we can't really do anything about it. And of course, during the summer especially, there has been an outbreak of a lot of infectious organisms, namely hepatitis A. We have a lot of cases of gastroenteritis. Let's say we suspect that there are a lot of cases of cholera here, which is very scary. Already a patient or two died in the middle area of Gaza. And yeah, I'm suffering from, I don't know, probably acute viral gastroenteritis, probably could be hepatitis A. And this also another topic. Even doctors like me, who are very meticulous about their hygiene, about their food habits, will get infected eventually because we lack proper hygienic tools. And so, yeah.
I'd like to ask you something specific about that. The government of Israel and media here in the United States are reporting that Israel has instituted an 11-hour pause in bombing, and we are seeing maps and news coverage here that show a route from the Kerem Abu Salam, or Kerem Shalom in Hebrew, crossing directly to the European Gaza hospital. What is the actual situation in terms of that pause and reports that more aid is going through? What is the actual situation there?
Well, so I personally do not believe or rely on Israeli information when it comes to a safe area or not, really. It is very heartbreaking, but this is the truth. I personally lost my house when it was in the safe zone. I got injured twice, and you just really can't develop any kind of feeling of believing what they say, because it's just never the case. And I personally was shocked by the, you know, the humanitarian pause or whatever they call it, because in real life, drones were always there, tanks and missiles and artillery shells keep going. So it's not that safe per se. And the medical aid, we haven't received any, barely anything. Of course, there are some foreign doctors from medical delegations that come and pass through Kerem Abu Salam crossing, but we're talking about like 3-5 doctors only, and they can do so much because they are allowed to only carry 2 suitcases and 1 backpack, most of which are not medical equipment. They're not allowed to carry a repeating item. For example, if I'm going to bring like 2 stethoscopes, one of them is not going to pass. Especially medications also is a big problem because they do not allow any medications to come through, even like simple medication. It's just nope. And so these doctors that I've talked to, those who came here recently, are very frustrated because they brought a lot of expensive items. They brought a lot of medication, and they even contacted me to ask for feedback. Okay, we need this, we need that. And they barely came in with anything. So whatever they say is not really the case. And the European hospital now is the central hospital in the south of Gaza. And it's very close to the eastern borders. Let's say if the Israeli forces wanted to, let's say, encircle or invade this hospital, it only would take 10 minutes. And so it is very risky for most doctors to come here. And this is one of the reasons why they are very understaffed, because everyone's just afraid of their lives. But at the same time, this eastern area, this eastern front, has a lot of people living here still, a lot of refugees and displaced people. And so it is also an obligation for people like us to stay here and try to provide as much healthcare as humanely possible, even though we are not able to reach a standard of care fit for humans, which is, it's very frustrating, really. Yeah.
Well, I have tremendous respect, and I'm sure everyone watching this does, for the courage of what you and others are doing, the sacrifice you're making. Just to clarify for our viewers, you yourself are quite ill and still doing this. And I think that impresses, speaking for myself, that impresses on us in this country that is more responsible than anything, any entity in the world. This country is enabling Israel to do all the things that you're describing. And we have a tremendous responsibility here, those of us who have heard what you have to say, to do everything in our power to stop that genocide immediately. And I really hope that what people have gotten from what they've heard from you inspires and compels them to act. So thank you so much for the sacrifice you're making, and the particular sacrifice you made to do this interview. Is there anything you wanted to say before we go?
Oh, absolutely. I just want to encourage American people, especially those who come out and protest in the universities, in the streets, in their homes, those who post online, those who come outside and try to leave a fingerprint when the government is very oppressive against them. They, whenever a person opposes the government propaganda when it comes to supporting Israel, when they try to resist and try to change the status quo when it comes to universities blindly supporting Israel, the government, the universities don't care about them. They are risking a lot. They're risking their education, they're risking their jobs, and yeah, they're fighting for us. And I just want to say that thank you so much for that. And I'm truly grateful. I know sometimes shows, or it seems as if there is no impact, but there is. We're not going to see a quick change, but if people are brave enough now to fight for us, if people are willing to speak up for our cause, then there is hope for a change. And Rome wasn't built in a day. And same case for us right now. And with the help of people like you and those who protest for us, I hope we can see brighter days in our lifetime. Yeah. Thank you so much, Aaron.
Thank you, Dr. Jaber. And take care, and we'll stay in touch.
It's such a powerful interview. And, you know, thank you to Dr. Jaber for lending your voice and being on the ground. And I just, you know, we have such a responsibility to stand up against this nightmare, because it is our government that is funding and backing and fueling Israel in carrying out this genocide.
Yeah, it's why a big theme of Revolution Summer is no fascist Trump, no genocide Joe. The whole damn system's got to go. And we have to fight against this genocide and build the unity as broadly as possible of people standing up to stop this now. And we have to be in there contending and fighting for people to understand the source of this and the system of capitalism, imperialism, and the urgent need, and actually the heightened possibility now for us to have a shot at making a real revolution to bring this down. At the end of the show, we're going to talk a little bit about Revolution School and why you should sign up for it, to get into that more deeply. But before we get to that, we have two shorter pieces we want to share that take on the harm of religious fundamentalism and religion more broadly. Let's watch.
Check out what just happened in Louisiana.
This bill mandates the display of the Ten Commandments in every classroom in public, elementary, secondary, and post-education schools in the state of Louisiana.
Dottie Horton, one of the Louisiana state representatives who sponsored this bill, said it's a great thing. It'll allow students to look up at the wall and see what God says is right and what God says is wrong. Okay, well, let's actually look at what your supposed God says is right and wrong. Let's start with the 10th commandment. You know, a lot of times this is shortened to thou shalt not covet. That's good moral advice, right? We shouldn't be envious of others. But what is it that we're not supposed to covet? Look at what the text says. Thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's house, thy neighbor's wife, thy neighbor's slaves, thy neighbor's ox and donkey, or any of his possessions. In other words, slavery is perfectly fine. Just don't be jealous of how many slaves your neighbor has. And by the way, don't be fooled by the sanitized version they're planning to put up in the Louisiana schools, which is going to say, thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's maidservant or manservant. What they're talking about is slaves, male and female slaves. And let's also look at how in this 10th commandment, thy neighbor is clearly a man, and his wife is listed as just another one of his many possessions alongside his slaves and his house and his oxen. This reveals exactly how the 10 commandments view women, you know, and all throughout the Bible, how women are viewed as nothing more than property of men. And what is the clearly specified punishment if you violate any of these 10 commandments? Death. You work on Sunday? Death. You disrespect your parents? Death. You worship other gods like a billion Hindus in India do? Death. You use the Lord's name in vain? Death. Jesus f***ing Christ, goddamn! As the revolutionary leader Bob Avakian put it in his must-read book, Away With All Gods, Unchaining the Mind and Radically Changing the World. What's wrong with the Ten Commandments? Plenty. What harm would it do to have the Ten Commandments put up everywhere, including in all kinds of public places? Wouldn't that be a good moral instruction for our children? No, it would not. Not when you recognize what it is these commandments are actually talking about, and when you see what penalties are demanded for going against these commandments. Read this book.
This week in Mecca, 1,300 people died due to extreme heat while making what's supposed to be a holy pilgrimage. This brought to my mind how Bob Avakian starts his book, Away With All Gods, Unchaining the Mind and Radically Changing the World. He says, day after day, we learn of terrible tragedies that would make no sense if there were an all-knowing, all-powerful, and loving God looking over and looking out for human beings. But we are always told God works in mysterious ways. Mecca is in Saudi Arabia. It's the central holy site for Muslims. In the religion of Islam, making the pilgrimage to Mecca is a mandatory religious duty that must be carried out at least once in their lifetimes. In temperatures as high as 120 degrees, mostly older people who spent their whole lives saving up for this died from heat stroke and dehydration. Even the cheapest of these trips costs thousands of dollars. But those who could afford more expensive fees pay for air-conditioned buses and tents. And it was mostly the poorer people who walked for miles in full scorching sun without water or shelter who died. But God works in mysterious ways. No, the brutal inequality between rich and poor caused by this system of capitalism imperialism, the extreme heat that's rising in Saudi Arabia and around the world caused by this system of capitalism imperialism. One woman making the pilgrimage said, "It's only by God's mercy that I survived because it was incredibly hot." Think about the twisted, the slavish logic of this. If this supposedly all-knowing, all-powerful, and loving God gets credit for saving your life, isn't he also to blame for causing the deaths of over 1,000 other people just for making the pilgrimage that their religion mandates? To be clear, the problem here isn't with Allah specifically. As B.A. says in this book, Islam is no better and no worse than Christianity, or Judaism for that matter. But the problem is with this whole idea that there's some all-knowing God working in mysterious ways. No. As B.A. goes on to say, how much of this has to go on, and how long does it take before it becomes clear that if such a God existed, it would indeed be a cruel, vicious, sick, twisted, and truly monstrous God, that no sane and decent person would want to bow down to or follow such a God? And that it's very fortunate that no such God exists, and very liberating to finally come to that realization. So look, if you don't know why we need a revolution, if you don't know how that revolution is possible, then you don't know what you need to know. And you can change that this summer. We're doing a revolution school. It's going to start in mid-July, and it's going to go deeply into the first 11 of the Babavakian messages on social media to get into those questions, why we need a revolution, what's the nature of this system and what it's doing to people here and all over the world, and how revolution could be made, not in some far off distant time, but in this time we're living in now. So you can sign up if you go to revcom.us. You'll see a form on the website. We'll put a link in the description below and join us. It's going to be a 4-week session, and you know, we're going to get in deep.
Yeah, it's going to be a session on Zoom. So wherever you are in the country, you register and let us know your availability, because there'll be different sessions to fit different schedules, again, starting mid-July. Sign up today and get your friends to sign up. Look, Babavakian social media, at Babavakian Official on every social media platform. Through this, Babavakian is providing leadership, real-time leadership, hot on the heels of what is happening right now, how to understand events, what's happening, why they're happening, and what we need to be doing in relation to them to fight to bring forward a revolution. Babavakian helps you see what's beneath the surface of the sharpening divides in this society, divides that could come to a head soon. Now, it's incredible the number of people who are agonizing about what's happening in this country, what's happening in this world right now. Many people fear for what's coming. But through his social media messages, Babavakian is getting at what is hidden beneath the surface. Again, not just the danger of something terrible, but the possibility of something truly emancipating, an actual revolution. And he's showing us how to work for this revolution now. He's training us what to pay attention to, how to think about what's going on in the world, and how we need to be acting in relation to these events. And it makes all the difference in whether we can seize on this rare time, whether we can wrench out a revolution, whether we can train the hundreds of strategic commanders we need now to lead thousands and to lead millions to seize on and ripen and seize on the chance to make a real revolution. So sign up. Again, get your friends to sign up. Follow at Babavakian Official and enroll in the Revolution School and be talking about these on your own and amongst those you work with starting now.
Yeah. Yeah, this is really the that the powers that be do not want you to know.
And that brings us to the end of another show here at the Michael Slate Show. I'd like to thank Andy Z and everybody at the Revolution Nothing Less Show, my assistant producer, Henry Carson, and all of you for tuning in. And again, check out the RevComs on YouTube at youtube.com/TheRevComs and follow at Babavakian Official on all your social media platforms. And remember, the problem is not human nature. It is the nature of the system. Through a real revolution, a better world is possible. My name is Sansara Taylor. I'll talk to you again next week.